Welcome back to The Truth About the Market, where we cut through the noise and talk about what's really happening in aviation. Not the hype, not the headlines, but the truth. I'm your host, Jason Zilberbrand. I'm president of VREF. Over my career, I've appraised just about everything that flies from Pipers to Gulfstreams. For clients that range from the FAA and SpaceX to celebrities, billionaires, global financial institutions, and some of the largest aircraft fleets in the world, I've also owned, operated, bought, and sold my own aircraft, so I understand these issues not just academically, but operationally and financially. And just as important, this podcast is sponsor-free. There are no paid-for opinions, there are no advertisers to appease, and no incentive to soften reality. What you hear is unfiltered, because aviation doesn't reward spin, and markets punish misinformation. If you're buying, selling, refinancing, or even just thinking about an aircraft, this episode will save you real money, no hype, just consequences. I see the same mistakes over and over. Smart people, successful people, doctors, entrepreneurs, CEOs, people who are absolutely brilliant in their own field. And the worst part, they don't realize the damage until years later. When the exit fails, when the airplane won't sell, when the refinance falls apart, when the bank suddenly asks questions no one warned them about. So today, let's talk about the expensive ones. Here's the uncomfortable truth about buying an aircraft. Most of the mistakes are not dramatic. There's no engine failure or crash or headline in the news. They're quiet mistakes. They're often on paper, structural mistakes. And those are the ones that cost the most, because aviation is one of the only asset classes where you can do everything right on the surface. You can buy a great plane, you can use a well-known broker, you can finance it with a reputable lender, and still destroy millions of dollars in value without realizing it. Not because you were reckless, but because you were uninformed. And here's what makes this dangerous. Aviation feels familiar. It looks like real estate. It smells like equipment finance. People talk about it like cars. It's none of those things. So why successful people are most at risk? Because, ironically, the people who get burned the worst are often the most successful. Why? Because they're used to delegating. They hire experts. They trust systems. They assume the incentives are aligned. And in aviation, they usually aren't. Most buyers assume that the broker is protecting them and that the bank understands their asset and that the inspection is going to tell the full story and that the market just will take care of itself. But none of that is guaranteed. In fact, in many cases, the incentives are directly opposed to your long-term outcome. The broker wants the deal closed, and the lender wants the paper out the door, and the maintenance facility just wants the aircraft out the door so they can worry about the next 15 that they've got to deal with. And nobody's paid to care about your exit, except for you. The exit is where the bodies are. Let me tell you something most people don't hear until it's too late. You don't find out whether you made a good aircraft purchase when you buy it. You find out when you try to sell it. That's when obsolescence shows up and liquidity disappears, rare becomes unsellable, and paper value turns out to be a fantasy. This is where I see the real damage. Aircraft that looked fine on day one, but were structurally mispositioned in the market. They either had the wrong configuration or wrong maintenance philosophy or the wrong avionics strategy or the wrong assumptions about demand. And the owner, they did exactly what they were told. And that's the part that really bothers me. So why does this keep happening? Because the aviation market is fragmented. It's opaque. It's thinly traded. I've told you guys this before. There's no Zillow. There's no MLS. There's no central clearing price. Most market data is self-reported. It's selectively shared or flat out wrong. And because deals are infrequent and buyers don't get repetition, they don't get feedback loops. You might buy one airplane every 10 years. The people advising you, they do this every day. That imbalance matters. And here's the part nobody likes to say out loud. Bad advice in aviation doesn't look bad right away. It just ages poorly. So over the next few minutes, we're going to do something different. We're not going to talk about, is this a good deal or what's the fastest airplane? What's hot this year? We're talking about structural mistakes and valuation traps and financing myths, obsolescence risk, and why so many exits fail quietly. No hype, no sales pitch, no cheerleading. Just the things I wish every buyer understood before signing that LOI, because aviation doesn't forgive abstraction, and it always collects the bill eventually. This is the truth about DeMarket, and today we're starting with the most expensive mistakes aircraft buyers keep making. This episode is brought to you by VREF, the trusted name in aircraft valuations and appraisals. Whether you fly a piston single or manage a business jet fleet, VREF keeps you grounded in data that matters. Visit VREF.com to know what your aircraft is really worth before you buy, sell, finance, or insure. So let's talk about the mistakes. This is mistake number one. It's confusing asking prices with market value. This is the most common, the most expensive mistake aircraft buyers make. They assume that price they see is the price that matters, and it isn't. Asking prices in aviation are not data. They're marketing. A listing is not a transaction, it's a wish. And in many cases, it's a placeholder designed to test the market, not reflect it. Sellers anchor high because there's no penalty for being wrong, no carrying cost with clock visible to the buyer, no public record of failure when the airplane doesn't sell. So prices drift upward, not because demand supports it, sometimes it does, but because nobody forces reality yet. And that's why listings are fiction. Now let's talk about comps. When buyers ask brokers for comparable sales, they usually receive a curated story, not a data set, a handful of examples stripped of context and framed optimistically. What you don't see are the high engine times and deferred maintenance and damage history. Maybe there's distress. Maybe there was creative financing. Or maybe the fact it took 18 months to close and three price cuts is the one that they're hiding from you. See, those variables matter. And it matters a lot because in thin markets like what we have in aviation, small differences swing value dramatically. Two airplanes that look identical on paper can be millions of dollars apart once you account for the condition, their supportability, and their market liquidity. Real market value is not an average, it's a clearing price. It's the number at which a specific airplane in its actual configuration and condition trades between a willing buyer and a willing seller without pressure. Without fantasy. And that number almost never shows up on a listing. The only prices that matter are the ones that clear quietly, often unreported, frequently inconvenient. This is why buyers who rely on asking prices consistently overpay on entry and then wonder why the exit feels so painful. Because the market doesn't care what the seller needs, it only pays what the buyers will. That's the line every buyer needs burned into their brain. If you anchor your purchase to listings, you're anchoring to hope. If you anchor to curated comps, you're anchoring to salesmanship. Market value lives somewhere else entirely, buried in completed transactions, adjusted for reality, and filtered through judgment of a professional. Miss that distinction and everything downstream breaks because the financing assumptions and insurance limits and residual value and exit timing are all related. And this mistake doesn't explode on day one. It compounds quietly. And by the time you discover it, the market's already moved on and it's done so without you. So let's move on to mistake number two, falling in love with the wrong aircraft. Most bad aircraft purchases don't start with bad intentions. They start with convenience. The airplane's local or the paint looks great or the interior feels new. Maybe the seller's easy to deal with. So the buyer just stops shopping. That's the first mistake. Buying an aircraft because it's nearby, familiar, or visually appealing has nothing to do with the market strength, but it feels decisive. The problem is that convenience and aesthetics disappear the moment you try to sell. Paint doesn't move markets. Location doesn't add value, and easy today often becomes hard later. Another common trap is refusing to accept the real mission. Buyers say they need range or speed or cabin size, but they rarely use it. Sometimes they're talked into it. Sometimes ego does the talking. Sometimes it's just fear of not having enough aircraft. So they buy too much. More complexity, higher operating costs, smaller buyer pool, tighter financing. And what looks like future-proofing often turns into overreach. The market doesn't reward excess capacity, it rewards fit. And then come the modifications, avionics upgrades, interior redesigns, special mission equipment, one-off configurations meant to create the perfect airplane. Here's the hard truth. The more an aircraft is modified, the smaller the resale market becomes. Every deviation from standard raises questions. Why it was changed, who did the work, when it was done, what it was used for, where it was based. And these questions will slow your deal, and uncertainty is going to kill it because buyers underestimate how quickly pedigree matters, where the aircraft has been, where it's operated out of, how hard it was worked, whether it ever had damage. Because none of these are deal killers by themselves, but each one narrows the buyer's pool. And here's where emotion does the real damage. Once buyers are invested, time, money, anticipation, they stop walking away, they rationalize red flags, they're going to explain the gaps in themselves, and they're going to convince themselves that answering will satisfy the next buyer. They stay the course because backing out feels like failure. That's how questionable aircraft get purchased. You talk yourself into it. Not because the data supported it, but because emotion overruled judgment. And experienced buyers do something most people find uncomfortable. They walk away early from airplanes that raise too many questions, from configurations that require explanations, and from deals that feel right, but the price is just wrong. Because in aviation, the easiest aircraft to own are rarely the hardest to sell. And the moment you start defending a purchase instead of analyzing it, that's when the mistake is already made. All right, let's talk about the third mistake, because this one I see all the time. It's everywhere. Buyers assuming the pre-buy inspection is their protection. It's not a substitute for a good contract. They think that if something is wrong, it'll be found. And they think if it's found, it's going to be fixed. Folks, that's not how this works. A pre-buy inspection is not a safety net. It's just a snapshot. It tells you what was visible, accessible, and tested that day. Under limited scope, with limited authority. And by the way, those terms are up to you and the seller. You have to negotiate those terms. So, you know, these squawks, they're not going to rewrite the deal. Sometimes they do. It depends on the size of the aircraft. It's not going to shift risk, because what's in that letter of intent, that's what you're legally protected to. That's how you protect yourself. That's why you have a contract. See, most aircraft purchase agreements are thin. Some are boilerplate. You see them. They're all over the internet. And many are written by brokers. And I wonder why that is. Almost none are written to protect the buyer in a dispute. And that's a problem. A bad contract quietly allocates risk to the buyer, and often without them realizing it. If the agreement says the aircraft is sold as is, where is, then the pre-purchase becomes informational only. Findings don't obligate the seller to fix anything. They don't require price adjustments. They don't even require the seller to respond. You probably won't even be able to do one. Buyers assume common sense will prevail. It will not. Maintenance discrepancies discovered during a pre-buy don't magically create leverage unless the contract gives you that leverage. Otherwise, the seller can just say no, or worse, say nothing. This is where deals go sideways. Buyers sink money into inspections and travel. They put deposits in escrow, and they assume that the process itself provides protection. They emotionally commit before the legal framework is finished. By the time the pre-buy report lands, their negotiating position is already weakened. And when a serious issue appears, damage history questions, undocumented repairs, corrosion, engine irregularities, the buyer only has bad options. Proceed anyway, renegotiate from a weak position, or walk away and eat the loss. That's not diligence, that's exposure. A strong contract does three things before the airplane ever moves. It defines what constitutes an acceptable aircraft. It establishes clear remedies if findings exceed agreed thresholds. And it gives the buyer the unilateral right to walk away cleanly. A pre-buy should confirm assumptions, not create surprises. But without competent legal review, buyers confuse process with protection, and they rely on inspections to save them from contracts that already failed them. The smartest buyers flip the sequence. They lock down the deal structure first. They define standards, remedies, and the exit right away in writing. Then and only then do they inspect the aircraft. Because when things go wrong in aviation, the inspection report won't matter. The contract will. Let's talk about mistake number four, which is assuming financial approval means you bought right. This mistake is subtle, but it's very expensive. Buyers take comfort in financing approval. Think about it. If a bank is willing to lend, the assumption is the aircraft must be sound. It isn't. Lenders don't validate purchases. They manage their own risk. That distinction matters. Because a credit committee is not underwriting your exit strategy. They're underwriting their downside. If the loan performs, they win. If it doesn't, they repossess and liquidate. Your outcome and theirs are not the same. Banks rely on conservative loan-to-value ratios, standardized appreciation models, and broad asset assumptions. They don't price nuance. They don't reward rarity. They don't care whether the airplane is uniquely configured or emotionally appealing or poor market fit. Approval simply means the aircraft fits within their tolerance. Not that it's a good buy for you. Even worse, financing can mask over payment. A buyer focuses on monthly payment instead of total exposure. The deal works because rates are favorable or amortization is stretched. The price quietly stops mattering. That's how people overpay by seven figures and feel fine doing it. Lenders also lag the market. Their models are slow to adjust. They smooth volatility. They often finance yesterday's values, especially in turning markets. By the time credit tightens, buyers have already locked themselves into the wrong asset at the wrong basis. Another misconception. Banks don't care about liquidity the way owners do. An aircraft that takes 18 months to sell is not a problem for the lender. It's collateral. For an owner, it's capital trapped, optionally lost, and timing destroyed. Financing approval also doesn't account for personalization. Custom interiors, non-standard avionics. These don't improve bank underwriting. They complicate resale. The lender's exit is blunt. Yours is precise. Smart buyer street financing is a tool, not as a signal. They ask, would I buy this airplane at this price without leverage? Does the market support this basis independent of debt? What happens if I need to exit early? If the answers rely on the bank's participation, the risk is already mispriced. Financing should amplify a good decision, not justify a bad one. The market doesn't care who approved your loan. It only cares what the next buyer will pay. And by the time you learn the difference, the leverage is already working against you. All right, mistake number five, confusing insurance value for book value and market value. It's one of the fastest ways to expose inexperience in aviation, and it's a really simple one, actually, because you're mixing up value definitions. Insurance value is not book value, and book value isn't market value. They sound interchangeable. They aren't even close. Each exists for a different reason. And trust me, they each serve a different audience and they answer a different question. Confusing them leads to bad decisions. It'll probably give you a weak negotiating stance and real financial exposure because insurance value exists to replace an asset after a loss. It's designed around risk transfer, not liquidity. Policies often use agreed value or stated value, set high enough to avoid underinsurance and disputes. That number reflects reconstruction cost. Not what the aircraft would sell for in an orderly liquidation transaction. It's intentionally conservative on the upside because it's replacement cost. It's not what the aircraft would sell for in pre-owned market. That's why insurers don't care if an aircraft would actually trade at that level. They care about worst-case replacement. Book value exists for accounting. It tracks capitalized cost minus depreciation. Adjusted by accounting rules, not behavior. Book value can remain high long after market value has moved on or drop quickly while demand remains strong. Neither scenario tells you what a buyer will pay. Book value is backward-looking. Markets are forward-looking. Market value exists for one purpose only, to estimate the price at which an aircraft will change hands between a willing buyer and a willing seller under current market conditions without compulsion. That number moves constantly. It reacts to supply and demand and obsolescence and regulatory pressure. It responds to financing appetite and fleet behavior. It is uncomfortable because it ignores what you paid, what you insured, or what your balance sheet says. That's also why it's the only value that matters when you're buying, selling, or refinancing. The danger appears when these values drift apart and no one notices. Owners assume insured value supports asking price, but it doesn't. And buyers believe book value anchors fairness, but it doesn't. And lenders, insurance, and courts are very clear about which value they care about, depending on the situation. Lenders focus on market value for collateral coverage. Courts look to market value in disputes and damages. Insurers only care about the number written into the policy. Use the wrong one and the outcome changes. This is how owners end up overinsured and overconfident, underwater without realizing it, or shocked when a court ignores the number they thought that mattered. Experienced operators keep these values separate and current. They insure to protect risk, they account to satisfy reporting, and they transact based on market reality. When those lines blur, decisions break, value isn't a single number, it's context. And the moment you use the wrong one for the wrong purpose, the market will correct you without warning. If you're tired of guessing aircraft values, try VREF Online. Real-time data, quarterly updates, and over 900 models at your fingertips. From residual value forecasts to depreciation trends, it's a platform trusted by every lender, insurance company, and broker worldwide. Subscribe today at VREF.com. Start making decisions based on facts and feelings, not AI slop. Okay, let's switch over to utilization, because that's mistake number 6. It's the mistake nobody wants to hear because it forces an honest conversation with yourself. Aircraft ownership only makes sense if you actually use the airplane. That's a simple rule of thumb almost every buyer ignores. If you don't fly enough, you shouldn't own it. Ownership is not a status symbol. It's a utilization problem. Fixed costs don't care how often you fly. The hangar, the insurance, your training, maintenance programs, calendar-driven inspections, these costs accrue whether the airplane moves or not. Low utilization doesn't preserve value, it destroys it. Airplanes are mechanical systems designed to operate. When they sit, the seals dry out, the batteries fail, corrosion can accelerate, small issues become big ones and expensive ones. Ironically, flying less often increases cost per hour. Buyers underestimate this because they anchor to variable costs, you know, fuel, oil, routine maintenance, while ignoring the fixed burden that dominates ownership economics. That's how a light-use airplane becomes the most expensive one on the field. Utilization also dictates marketability. High fixed costs with low hours don't signal care. They signal inefficiency. Buyers don't pay premiums for underused aircraft. They pay for condition, supportability, and predictable economics. Another trap is optimistic forecasting. Look, buyers plan to fly 200 hours a year, and life intervenes, and schedules change, and then all of a sudden that drops to 75. The airplane isn't going to adjust. That's when alternatives start making more sense. Maybe you should charter. There's fractional ownership. There's local partnerships. There's managed programs. They're not compromises. These are just utilization solutions. Yet many buyers reject them because ownership feels cleaner, simpler, or more prestigious. Sometimes it isn't. Ownership without utilization is leverage without income. The smartest operators work backward. They calculate realistic annual hours. They stress test against local scenarios. They compare total cost per hour, not just hourly operating cost. If ownership only works in the best case utilization model, it doesn't work at all. There's also an exit angle buyers miss. Low utilization doesn't protect resale. It can weaken it. An aircraft that's sat unused will raise questions to buyers. Why wasn't it flown? What kind of maintenance was deferred? Are they hiding problems? Those questions slow deals and they compress the price. High utilization aircraft with disciplined maintenance often outperform Hangar Queen any day. The rule is simple, even if it's uncomfortable, fly enough to justify your ownership or don't own an airplane. Aviation rewards honest math. Ignore utilization and the airplane will quietly turn into an expensive reminder of a decision that never penciled out. Our last mistake is timing the market instead of structuring the deal. This is where otherwise smart buyers get trapped. They believe success comes from timing, buying at the bottom, selling at the top, waiting for the right moment. Look, that market works in liquid markets. Aviation is not one of them. Aircraft markets are thin, they're opaque and slow to signal change. By the time a downturn is obvious, pricing has already moved on. By the time confidence returns, inventory is gone. Entry price matters, but far less than exit flexibility. Buyers who focus on timing usually don't buy low. They wait, and waiting has a cost. Good aircraft disappear quietly. The best configurations get absorbed early. What remains is compromised, over-modified, or poorly maintained, or maybe they're just mispriced altogether. That's how buyers end up paying more later for worse aircraft, and liquidity matters more than peak timing. An aircraft that can sell quickly protects capital better than a cheaper one that can't move when the conditions change. Speed of exit is value. Yet buyers negotiate headline price while ignoring structure. Structure is what determines outcomes, your configuration, your maintenance posture, engine strategy, contract terms, financing. These elements dictate whether you can exit cleanly or whether you're trapped. A well-structured deal gives you choices. A perfectly timed deal without structure gives you none of those. Another myth is that waiting reduces risk. It doesn't. Waiting just concentrates it. Markets don't pause. External shocks arrive without warning. Regulatory shifts happen mid-cycle, and OEM production changes distort supply overnight. The buyer waiting for clarity often enters under worse conditions with less leverage and fewer alternatives. Sophisticated buyers understand this. They don't ask, is this the bottom? They ask, can I exit this aircraft under multiple scenarios? And they prioritize a broad buyer appeal with a clean pedigree. They want minimal explanation at resale, no storytelling. They want resilient financing. And they accept that no one rings a bell at market extremes. Timing is luck. Structure is control. The irony is that buyers who obsess over timing usually lose negotiating power. Sellers sense hesitation. That's when deals drift and the leverage evaporates. Meanwhile, the disciplined buyers transact decisively, not impulsively, and when the structure works. Because in aviation, you don't win by predicting the market. You win by surviving it. And the best deals aren't defined by when you bought. They're defined by how easily you can exit. None of these mistakes come from ignorance. They come from confidence, from assuming aviation works like real estate or stocks or cars. It doesn't. A good aircraft can survive a bad market. A bad deal never survives reality. If you're unsure whether you're buying the airplane or the story, you need to get a second opinion. Look, none of these mistakes come from ignorance. They come from confidence, from being successful elsewhere in life, from running successful businesses that allowed you the opportunity to have the disposable income to purchase an aircraft. You got to stop assuming that aviation works like buying a house or a building or stocks or a business, because it doesn't. Aviation doesn't reward intelligence alone, it rewards discipline. It doesn't care what you paid, it doesn't care what you insured it for, it doesn't care who financed it or how smart the deal felt at the time. It only cares about structure, relevance, and liquidity. Every mistake we talked about today comes down to the same thing: confusing comfort with protection. The market is quiet when it disagrees with you. It doesn't argue. It doesn't warn you. It just waits. And when you try to sell, and when you try to refinance, that's when you discover that you need more options. That's when reality sets in. A good aircraft, we say it all the time, it's going to survive that bad market. If this episode made you feel uncomfortable, that's the point. Because comfort is usually where the mistakes start. This isn't about buying less airplane. It's about buying the right one, the right way, for the right reasons. And aviation punishes assumptions because it's always going to come and collect that bill. Trust me, it does. Eventually, it always does. So if today's conversation helped you see the market differently, do me a favor, share this episode, subscribe to The Truth About the Market. Please hit the review button and leave us a 5-star review. And remember, when you need accurate, defensible, and data-driven aircraft values, there's only one name in the industry to trust. That's VREF. Visit VREF.com to get started today. Thank you for listening. I'm Jason Zilberbrand, and this is The Truth About the Market. Until next time, fly safe and stay smart.